Good evening. You're listening to 88.7 WHCL-FM, Clinton, New York. I'm your host, Pete Bianco, and this show is titled The Ringer. And my guest this evening is Dr. Blanche Gruby. Dr. Gruby, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome, Pete. It's my pleasure.
I have had a fascination with dental health for a while and curiosity about it. And so could you help me and the listeners understand what is tooth decay and why does it happen to us?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of my favorite subjects. Absolutely. Well, most people are under the very false idea that they get tooth cavities or tooth decay when they don't brush their teeth properly, or they've been told by dentists that they didn't floss properly, or they didn't rinse. You know, back in the 60s and in the 50s and the 60s, there was a very popular tooth rinse that people would be rinsing their teeth with. You know, I can remember my grandmother still smelling of it because that she used to rinse with it constantly. And it's been proven that that tooth rinse only removes bacteria from the mouth for about 30 seconds. So that's a very much of a fallacy. You do not get cavities because you don't brush your teeth or floss or rinse your mouth well enough. Just not true. The truth is that people get decay because there is demineralization or breakdown of the minerals in our body. And it doesn't just happen in the teeth, but happens throughout the whole body. So that makes decay a systemic event. It is a systemic disease. And so let me explain that a little further. First of all, the minerals in our body do line themselves up, just the way the minerals in the earth line themselves up. I mean, I know every woman for sure knows how a diamond is lined up very nicely, right? Diamonds are a girl's best friend. And so the same thing happens in the body. Now, in the body, if you consume sugar, sugar tends to, when I say sugar, I mean processed sugar, sucrose, the white stuff that's in the sugar bowl. When you consume sugar, it demineralizes the body. And that was proven by one of my favorite scientists by the name of Ralph Steinman. He took some mice, and he gave them sugar in their diet. And, of course, he had a group of control mice that had no sugar whatsoever. And the mice with the sugar in their diet, in their food, wound up getting decay, and the mice without the sugar did not get decay. Well, that's a nice, easy study, and you know, didn't surprise anybody. The next step in his study, he took the mice and he injected the sugar directly down into their stomach through a tube, bypassing the teeth. The mice who got the sugar in their stomach wound up getting decay, and the mice that didn't. Well, that surprised a few people. Then he took it one step further, and he literally injected sugar into the mice muscle, into their muscle mass, which eventually then dispersed itself throughout the body. And those mice got decay. It bypassed their teeth. It bypassed their digestive tract. Now it was systemic in their body, and they wound up getting decay. And the number one mineral that he had the most success with in looking at was phosphorus. He discovered that when their phosphorus level, which is a mineral, when their phosphorus level dropped below 3.4, the mice got decay. Now, what's fascinating is that that number, 3.4, is also true in humans. When humans' mineral level drops below 3.4 for phosphorus, they wind up getting decay, and it doesn't matter how often they brush their teeth. It doesn't matter how many times they floss. It doesn't matter what they do, what they rinse with, what their diet is. It doesn't matter. They will get decay if your mineral level is below 3.4. So that's a very interesting phenomenon. You wind up with demineralization, and that's the beginning of decay, which is not the same thing as an infection. When you have an infection, by definition, an infection means you have to have a certain amount or a certain number, a very high number of bacteria that are reproducing, and those bacteria are reproducing at a rate that is faster than the body can keep up with. In other words, the body sends white blood cells to any area that has a bacterial colony, and there's a war that goes on. The white blood cells are fighting the bacteria. They're chomping them away and eating them up like Pac-Man. And if that stays in balance, as the bacteria increase, the white blood cells increase, they chomp them up, they eat them up, if that stays in balance, you don't have an infection. As soon as it's out of balance and you have more bacteria multiplying exponentially and you can't, the white blood cells cannot be keeping up with it, now you have an infection. Big difference between the two. There are many people
Dr. Kirby,
yes.
Could you have demineralization with even if you had a sterile mouth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it has nothing to do with bacteria. The demineralization comes first from the sugar. It's a chemical reaction.
And are other parts of the body mineralized besides teeth and bones?
Oh, that's a good question. When you say mineralized, if you mean if it's structurally mineralized, or teeth and bones. Teeth and bones are structurally mineralized. That doesn't mean we have minerals everywhere in our body.
Okay.
You can't have a muscle contraction without potassium, magnesium, calcium, phosphorus. Those are all minerals. But they do not structure themselves. You do not have crystal formation in your muscles or in your joints. You're not supposed to anyway. If you do, we call that arthritis.
Did Dr. Stein figure out what it is specifically about sugar that makes it such a problem for our bodies?
No, he did not. But now we know, today we know, that sugar has almost the exact same chemical configuration as cocaine. It's all in the same family. There's just if you look at the chemical configuration of cocaine and you look at it at sugar, it's very much the same. And so it fits into many of the receptors in our body, the opioid receptors. That's what, they were first described for the use of opioids, but now we're finding out that sugar fits into those opioid receptors in the body, which is why sugar is so addictive. Now, even white bread, when white bread gets consumed, it is metabolized, it turns into a sugar, it fits into those same opioid receptors in the body, and we become addicted to it, and we just feel like we just got to have it.
But didn't Dr. Steinman find a way that he could supplement the rats with different minerals and nutrients and stop the decay process?
That's
the
right.
Demineralization process.
Right. He had to give them a tremendous amount of minerals. You know, prior to the, I would say maybe about the turn of the century, because not everybody had electricity at the same time. You know, the first electric light went off in Buffalo, New York, and then spread to areas like Scranton. Scranton is considered the first electric city because we were the first ones to have electric cars. Prior to that time, people cooked over fires. They burned wood. They burned coal. And when they did that, they produced a lot of ashes. Well, those ashes are minerals that wound up in our food. And then when they were done cooking, those extra ashes got thrown out in the garden. They got thrown out in the backyard. And so that's where the family garden was grown. And so that food that was grown was very high in mineral content also. And so if you increase your mineral content, you can probably go ahead and eat the sugar. And it'll balance itself out. But our diet today in the year 2013 is very deplete of minerals.
Hmm.
Our diet, the foods we eat are depleted in minerals, and then there's many people who don't take additional supplementation of minerals.
With something like sugar in its natural form, now white sugar is something that's been refined,
right,
where molasses is taken, is the byproduct, correct, of refined sugar?
Right, it's one of the byproducts of refined sugar, but
and then
right,
Steinman and Leonora discovered that by adding back some B vitamins and magnesium, those are the same kind of things that you see in the molasses. So I'm wondering if the sugar was whole, would it be having the effect on the body, or is it the fact that we've distilled it or processed it?
Sugar is whole, then you're talking about something like succinate. Succinate,
right,
is whole sugar. It is just the plain sugar juice evaporated, and that is loaded with minerals. Now you can consume all the succinate you want. Your phosphorus level is not going to drop below 3.4.
Huh.
Okay. Same thing with honey. Honey is loaded with minerals. Agave nectar, loaded with minerals. So these are the so-called good minerals, the good sugars for us. Not the same as white sugar.
Tests on people to see if these different substances are dropping. I mean, is anyone currently doing research on this 3.5 or 4 phosphorus level?
Well, I think there's a fellow by the name of Dr. Hal Huggins. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes, I have.
All right. Dr. Hal Huggins has literally 300,000 what he calls data points, where he has looked at the phosphorus levels of literally thousands of patients and have discovered that when he changes their diet and he has them staying away from white sugar, their phosphorus level goes up. And I've done the same with my patients. I've never done anything specific where it's actually a paid-for research grant. I'm not affiliated with any university, so you know it's difficult to get people to pay attention to that kind of thing. But I've looked at many, many patients, and I have found that the patients who are depleted in minerals are the ones that have the low phosphorus count. They also have low calcium count. It's across the board. It's not just one mineral. It's across the board. And as soon as they change their diet and only have a little bit, not a lot, of the sugars that we're talking about, and eat primarily a Western price kind of diet. Actually, the term paleo diet has become very much into fashion these days. Where in the paleo diet, people are talking about eating meat, eating some meat, eating lots of vegetables, some raw nuts, things like that. I mean, that's basically the Western price diet also. Limiting processed foods. Meat, vegetables, fruits, butter, and just very, very little in the way of processed foods.
And those meats and butter are coming from animals that are raised on grass?
Oh, absolutely. I'm talking about, you know, wild, grass-fed, no hormones, no antibiotics, wholesome, clean animals. You know, I had a friend criticize me once and say to me, Blanche, how can you eat meat from a cow that you once knew, that you petted, that you fed? And I just looked at her and I said, how can you eat a cow that you didn't know? Really? I mean, I know my animals. I see where they come from. I see, and I'm not. I know that's very impractical for a lot of people, but there are more and more stores now that carry sections with grass-fed, wholesome food. And you can certainly go on the internet and find plenty of places to get organic beef. You can get buffalo. You can get all kinds of meats that are not processed the way McDonald's meat is processed.
Dr. Gruby, are you familiar with Melvin Page's work?
Yes, I am.
So he was testing blood phosphorus and calcium ratios on his patients and found an ideal place for them. But then he was manipulating their blood chemistry using, was it insulin and parathyroid hormone? Is that right?
Yes, he was using parathyroid hormone. But the insulin that he was using was protamine zinc insulin. It's not the same insulin that a diabetic would be injecting. And so, here again, it was insulin with zinc added to it. Again, another mineral. And, you know, he got some very good results with it.
Now, is anyone still following that line of thought?
Dr. Hal Huggins and Dr. Blanche Gruby. Those are the only two people I know.
Wow. Well, you guys are under known, I suppose.
Right.
Well, glad to be speaking with you on this topic. And so what do you think is the role of the fermented cod liver oil? I heard that Weston Price had said that he thought if people had taken a certain amount of cod liver oil that they'd see a great decrease in their tooth decay.
I have not seen that. I haven't had too many patients willing to take fermented cod liver oil.
Okay.
Yeah, I have not seen that. It's,
now, what about
for me, it's enough to get them to stop eating processed food. There really is.
How about
it's, you know, there are a few things that you can talk with people about, And there's a few things you cannot talk with people about. Most people get most upset when you try to change their eating habits. It's right up there with don't talk to them about religion, politics, or their eating habits.
Right.
You can talk. You can ask somebody about their sexual habits way before you can ask them about what they eat and what they should not eat. No kidding.
What about the role of vitamin K2 in dental health?
That I'm not familiar with. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Tell us a little bit about once you do get decay, what are the options?
Well, once somebody gets decay, if the decay is only in the enamel of the tooth, which is the outside layer of the tooth, and that distance of the enamel, it varies. I mean, all the way down at the neck of the tooth, it can be as thin as a tenth of a millimeter. But on the top of the tooth, it can be as thick as 2 millimeters. So it all depends on where the demineralization begins. If you have demineralization of the tooth and it's only in the enamel of the tooth, that can be remineralized. There was a fellow out who wrote a book called Oil Pulling, where if you put a tablespoon of coconut oil, sesame oil, or olive oil in your mouth and you rinse with it for a few minutes and then, of course, spit it out into a Ziploc bag so you don't clog up your drain. If you do this, you'll be removing a lot of the bacteria in your mouth, pulling out a lot of toxins from your teeth, and then on top of that, add a lot of minerals to your diet. If you do all of that, that area can remineralize. But once the bacteria have entered past the enamel and into the dentin of the tooth, that's the point at which a dentist will see it on an X-ray or a digital image, and that's the point at which it is truly decay. Now, I've had many patients tell me, you know what, doc, don't fill that, don't make a bigger hole. I'm going to go ahead and remineralize that on my own, and I'm going to take care of that so you don't have to fix it. And I'm always open to it. I say, okay, really, let me see it happen. And they've done all kinds of things, and I've never seen it happen. I personally have been in dentistry over 40 years. I have never seen somebody remineralize decay once it's in the dentinal layer of the tooth. And it's
so
just
then what's happening structurally at that point?
At that point, the bacteria are now living inside the dentinal tubules. And at that point, the fluid has stopped flowing from the inside of the tooth to the outside. That was something that Melvin Page had brought to everybody's attention. He knew also that fluid went from the inside of the tooth to the outside, and in the process of doing that, it washed out the dentinal tubules. Well, when the phosphorus level drops below 3.4, the fluid stops moving from the inside to the outside and reverses itself. It flows from the outside to the inside of the tooth. When it does that, it carries the bacteria with it. Those bacteria travel down the dentinal tubules, very much like the old coal miners in Scranton, and they eat up the protein layers inside the tooth. And then as they eat up the protein layers inside the tooth, of course, they metabolize it, and they release their own, for lack of a better term, piss and poop. That's what it is. And the bacteria from the piss and poop is very acidic. So you'll hear a lot of people talk about the acid that is produced by bacteria. They're absolutely right about that, but that's not the real problem. That's not where it started. It started from a lack of mineralization in the body. And then so then those bacteria just continue eating their way towards the pulp of the tooth. And why do they do that? Because it's a lot less work. Once they get into the pulp of the tooth, there's blood there. There's more protein, there's lots of fluid. It's a much happier, warmer place to be than to be chomping their way through these teeny little dentinal tubules. So the bacteria always head towards the pulp of the tooth. Once they've entered that pulp of the tooth, now the tooth can never, ever survive completely. It is just a matter of time before the bacteria literally eat up all of the pulp. And when they do that, once the bacteria eat up all of the pulp of the tooth, while this process is going on, you probably have a toothache. Or at the very least, you're going to get this twang of pain and you go, maybe I ought to go to the dentist. Maybe next week, maybe next month. And most people tend to ignore it. And so now the bacteria continue eating up the pulp of the tooth. They continue to produce bacterial byproducts or waste products, and they continue to produce gases also. Once they've done all of that, you now have a dead tooth. They've eaten up everything all the way down to what we call the end of the root. Once they do that, and now it's entering into the bone that's surrounding the tooth, they begin to put pressure, the bacterial gases begin to put pressure on the bone. Well, bone doesn't like pressure. It really doesn't. As a matter of fact, bone dissolves under pressure. When bone dissolves, it disappears, and when the dentist takes an x-ray, he looks at it, and he says to the patient, you know what? You've got an abscess. You now need, which is a kind of funny word, you need a root canal. Well, nobody needs a root canal. Absolutely not.
When you refer to abscess, does that mean that there's a hole where the tooth was or there's a hole in the bone?
There's now a hole where the tooth was, in the middle of the tooth, all the way down the canal, and now there's a hole in the bone produced by the gases from the bacteria. Okay, so the gases, and as those gases increase and there's more pressure put on the bone, what appears to be an abscess, of course, you know, you can't see an abscess with the naked eye. What you're seeing is the dissolution of the bone. As that gets bigger and bigger, you wind up with more pain, usually. And I underline the word usually because some people actually are walking around with abscesses and they don't even know it. And it's just a marvel at the way the human body works, because as those abscesses get larger, they tend also to burrow through the bone, and it just the body. I'm not sure if the body does that or the bacteria do that. It doesn't make sense to me that the bacteria would look for an escape plan when they've got so much food and free housing and warm circulation and everything right there in the bone. Why do they stay there? But they don't. They tend to burrow a hole through the bone all the way to back out to the outside. Now the patient says, gee, I've got this pimple here on my gums, and when I squeeze it, I get white pus out of that. I'm not really sure why that happens. It doesn't make sense to me. If the war is going on and the war is being fed by the bacteria, why would they put themselves in a situation where they're gonna blow their cover, basically? Because once the patient sees that pimple, they say, oh, yes, I have an abscess. Now they're aware of it. And then, of course, they go to the dentist. And the dentist says, you need a root canal. Well, you either need a root canal or you need to have the tooth taken out. Because that tooth now has dead tissue inside of it. It is now necrotic. That's a fancy word that dentists use for saying it's dead. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not 100% dead, but it's maybe 60-70% dead. You still have a little bit of live tissue in the sideways canals. And so if the patient agrees to having a root canal, the dentist then begins to file out all that necrotic, dead, mushy tissue in the middle of the tooth. They keep filing until that main canal is somewhat clean. It's kind of like roto-rootering the middle of a bark of a tree, but leaving the outside bark. Can you imagine if you're cleaning out the middle of a tree and then you fill it, but you still have millions of branches coming off from this tree? And so the bacteria are still living in the branches, which is why a root canal can never, ever, ever be sterilized. The dentist may put all kinds of chemicals down there. They may put formaldehyde. They may put phenol. They may put all kinds of plasticizers. They can never, ever sterilize a tooth because the tooth is just too convoluted. You've got tunnels and tubes and little canals everywhere, and every single one of them is filled with bacteria. So the dentist does the best they can possibly do. They clean out the main canal. They fill the main canal, and then they seal it up. Well, something very special happens when they seal it up, and that special is not good. Now the tooth is sealed up, temporarily, but sealed up. The bacteria that were inside that canal were at one time aerobic, meaning air-breathing bacteria. Once the dentist seals the tooth up and there's no longer any air down there, the bacteria undergo this magical process called pleomorphism. They go from being air-breathing bacteria to non-air-breathing bacteria. They become anaerobic. Anaerobic bacteria are much more lethal. That's your E. coli, your botulism. Those are anaerobic bacteria. Isn't that fascinating? How do these bugs do
that's
that?
That's incredible.
It is incredible. Can you imagine if you stuck me in a room and you sucked out the air from that room? There's no way I can change myself. I can't change myself and be a creature that no longer needs air. You know, that would be like becoming a fish, I suppose. But even fishes need oxygen. They get it from the water that they're in. But these bacteria are able to do that. They actually undergo pleomorphism. They go from being aerobic bacteria to anaerobic bacteria. Now they're still in there. They're trapped. They're anaerobic bacteria. And now they continue to eat the inside of the tooth. They continue to metabolize the proteins and the nutrients that they're getting. And then they continue to release toxins. Remember that piss and poop that I told you about? Well, those toxins, when they finally get to the point where those toxin levels are pretty high, they begin to seep out of the tooth. When they seep out of the tooth, then your immune system, your white blood cells, become very much aware of the fact that now we have an infection. We have a problem next to the tooth. We have a problem with tooth number 19, whatever number that is. And so now the white blood cells begin to try to get to this tooth, try to get rid of it, but they can't. It is just, in chiropractic philosophy, my husband's a chiropractor, so in our early days, we used to sit in on a lot of philosophy classes. In chiropractic philosophy classes, they have something called the limitation of matter. I love that expression, meaning there's just so much you can do. These little white blood cells, yeah, they could probably eat up a whole tooth. They could get rid of it, but it would probably take 60 years. Most people don't have that kind of time. And so now we've got a situation where you've got a tooth that's been sealed up by a dentist. It's still infected with bacteria. The bacteria continue to multiply. They continue to get nutrition from the food we eat. They continue to produce toxins. The toxins come out into the bloodstream. The body is aware of the fact that there's a problem there. It continues to send white blood cells to try to get rid of the tooth. The tooth is too big. Can't do it. The circulation around it is just not good enough. The teeth are different from the rest of the body. Every place else in the body, if you have an injury, eventually the injury heals itself. But teeth are different. We have nowhere near the circulation in a tooth that you have every place else. In fact, you don't even have near the circulation in the lower jaw that you have in other bones in the body, in other parts of the body. You just don't have it. So I can't wait until I die and go to heaven. I want to talk to God about that and ask him, why did you make the teeth so different? And I know what his answer is going to be. He's going to say, well, Blanche, you know what? The original plan was for you to be in the garden eating fruits and vegetables. For free. You just picked off the plant. And I'm going to have to say, touche, touche, you're right. That was the original plan.
Do you end up seeing more tooth decay in the jaw than you do in the upper teeth?
Absolutely. There's more tooth decay in the lower jaw than there is in the upper. Not that much more, but a little bit more.
And so then that...
You see more of a phenomenon called cavitations. You see more cavitations in the lower jaw than you do the upper jaw. And so what the heck is a cavitation? A cavitation is a cavity, a hole in the bone that is encapsulated, has no circulation in it whatsoever, and is just sitting there. It's kind of like a cesspool of bacteria in the jawbone. And most of them occur in the wisdom tooth site, where the circulation is the poorest to begin with. Teeth are taken out, but the bone never fully heals.
Are you familiar with the bone's piezoelectric nature?
No. I mean, I know
that when you apply electrical, or when you apply pressure to bones, they create an electrical response.
No, I'm not familiar with that. I mean, I understand a little bit. I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Oh, just that there's some researchers in Alberta, Canada, who are using ultrasound to stimulate regeneration of damaged tooth pulp. And I was just wondering if somehow this method stimulates the blood flow that you were talking about.
Well, it makes sense that it would, but again, I've never seen it happen. You know, it's just something like the Rife machine. Look at people have used the Rife machine, which is radionics, to stimulate put frequency into teeth and into the body to get it to heal. And I've seen tissue or body parts everywhere heal except teeth. I've never seen a tooth heal with radionics. I've had patients using Hilda Clark's little zapper, and I've seen zits go away. I've seen boils go away. I've seen cancer tumors shrink. I've seen wounds in the hands and feet go away. I've never seen a tooth heal. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so in theory, it does sound like it should work because, you know, we are electrical beings. But I've never actually seen a cavity heal. I've never seen a tooth resurrect itself and come back to life.
Well, before I heard about you and other people like you, I had never heard that you could remineralize a tooth.
Right,
so
right.
One can hope, can't one?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the future in dentistry, I really believe, is going to be stem cell research. Mm. And they're very close to it right now. They're actually taking stem cells, culturing them in a petri dish, and injecting them into sites in the jawbone. And depending on where they inject the stem cell, they're actually getting teeth to grow in as short as 9 weeks. Now, I find that absolutely fascinating. Absolutely.
So 9 weeks from beginning to end?
9 weeks from beginning. From the time it's injected in the jawbone, they draw blood from your arm, separate the stem cells, culture them. As soon as they begin to culture, they take those very same stem cells, inject it into your jawbone where you're missing a tooth. If you happen to be missing the front tooth, you get a central tooth growing. Amazing. If you happen to be missing a molar and that's where they inject the stem cells, you get a molar growing. So I really think that's going to be the future. I hope I live long enough to see it being used on a daily basis. Because I think that's going to be so much safer than somebody having an artificial implant put in, so much safer than somebody putting in cadaver grafting material in somebody's jawbone.
When you were talking about our electrical nature, could you talk a little bit about the meridians and how that relates to our teeth?
Sure. Most people are not aware of the fact that every single meridian in the body, the meridians are our energy patterns in the body. Thousands of years, 6,000 years before the Europeans discovered that you could cut a body open and start to name the heart, the lungs, the intestines, and then they got to a microscope and they started to name the nerves and blood vessels and every teeny little fiber. In Western medicine, we have a name for every single thing that you can see, even if that seeing is under an electron microscope. In Eastern medicine, they had 6,000 years ago, they had every single energy pattern in the body measured. So the Chinese understood that the heart meridian starts at the pinky, runs up the inside of the arm, circles around the heart, goes up to the wisdom tooth site. then comes back down the back of the neck, goes around the heart, goes right back down to the pinky, and this energy cloud continues to travel all day long. And if any of your listeners are a little bit skeptical about this, I invite them to go ahead and take the challenge. Actually, take your hand, place it over your heart, about 4 inches over your heart, and have it pass from your heart down your arm as if you were shooing a fly away. Just do it maybe 10, 20 times. Go from your heart down your arm all the way down to your pinky. And then take your pulse and see how many heartbeats you have per minute. Then do the reverse. Take your hand, open hand, from the outside, come up your arm to the heart as if you were shooing something, shooing or blowing dust away, coming up your arm, up to the heart, and then take your pulse again. After you've done it about 10, 15, 20 times, you'll see that your pulse has come up, and you haven't even touched your body. That's the key. Make sure you do not touch your body. When you do that, you're working with the energy cloud of the heart meridian. So when it comes to the meridians, every single meridian runs through a tooth. So now I just use the example of the heart meridian that runs through the wisdom teeth. Well, how many people in the United States have had their wisdom teeth taken out? How many people in the United States have had their wisdom teeth taken out unnecessarily? How many people have had their wisdom teeth taken out unnecessarily and the dentist used lots of epinephrine and the socket never healed? And I sometimes wonder if that's why we have so many people with heart problems. Because they're walking around with four cavitations where they had four wisdom teeth extracted and just never quite healed as well as it should have. Now, the first molar, which is the very large tooth in the four sections of the mouth, is often called the, one of the staples or one of the cinder blocks or one of the building blocks of the mouth. Anyway, it is one of the largest and strongest teeth in the mouth and is also the one of the teeth that we use the most is our first molar. The first molar is part of the large intestine meridian. And I have literally had patients who said to me, you know, this tooth is aching me and I don't know why. And I look at the tooth, I take an x-ray, the tooth looks perfectly good on an x-ray. I tap on the tooth, no pain whatsoever. But they say, yeah, every once in a while it aches. I get like a sensitivity in it. And I check the tooth very carefully, and there aren't any cavities whatsoever. And then I ask a simple question. So, when was your last bowel movement? And their eyes open wide, and they look at me with surprise, and they go, oh, I haven't had a bowel movement in 3 days. So you mean to tell me you're constipated? Yeah, I'm constipated. I haven't had a bowel movement. What's that got to do with my tooth? Well, the large intestine meridian runs through the first molar. So they didn't have a toothache at all. They're just constipated. And then I send them to my friendly colon hydrotherapist. Get that taken care of. And talk to them about diet and of course, you know, having lots of fiber, lots of water in their diet. But most people don't realize that very often it's, you know, which comes first? Is it the tooth that has the problem and that affects the organ? Or is it the organ that's having the problem and it's affecting the tooth? In all the years that I've been a biological dentist, and that's over 21 years, I have never had a woman with breast cancer come in and see me who did not have a root canal or a bicuspid extracted and has a cavitation. Never. And I've had many, many, many breast cancer, every week breast cancer patients come into the office. And the same goes for men, by the way. That breast cancer is not limited to women. So if a woman has a bicuspid, an upper first molar, that's where the meridian runs through. For some reason, it goes to the lower bicuspids, upper second bicuspid, and then the energy pattern goes to the first molar. Has a bicuspid or upper first molar root canal, she ought to feel her breast on that side and make sure she doesn't get any lumps. because if she has a lump, it may already be a little too late. Not that she should not have that root canal extracted right away. I believe she should. And here again, Pete, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people in conventional dentistry and medicine say, well, show me your double-blind university-based study of 50,000 women. In alternative medicine, we just don't have those studies. You know, if somebody would, you know, listen, throw some money at me, and I'll close my office for a while and go into the office of an oncologist. And I bet you I can go through all of the files of every woman with breast cancer and look at 100,000, maybe 200,000 women with breast cancer and show that every single one of them had a problem with one of their bicuspids. But who's paying for that study? When I say nobody has anything to gain from it, what I mean is no pharmaceutical company has anything to gain from it. No university-based hospital has anything to gain from it. The public has a tremendous amount to gain from it. I think that would be a very helpful bit of information to know that if you had a bicuspid root canal, you would put yourself in tremendous risk for developing breast cancer.
Now, I heard that Melvin Page was accused of practicing medicine outside the scope of practice.
That is correct.
And they brought him to court on it, and the judge ruled in his favor.
You know, it's very interesting. My very first day of dental school, they told us, here we are, all fresh. I mean, we're all excited. We just got accepted to dental school. We've got our brand new jackets on that have our name printed on the side. And they said to us that we were going to be trained to be doctors of the head and neck. And I sat there real proud, my chest up, my shoulders up. I said, yeah, that's right. Doctors of the head and neck. We're specialists in doctors of the head and neck. And then from that moment on, they proceeded to teach us how to fix teeth, period. And as soon as you step outside of fixing teeth and you talk to people about nutrition and about energy fields and homeopathy and what they should do to stay healthy, they want to accuse you of practicing medicine without a license. And it's just, I see that as a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ozone therapy, is that something that you use in your practice?
Yes, I do.
And
I love ozone.
Under what circumstances?
Well, I like to start, you know, ozone kills bacteria, viruses, yeast, fungi, you name it. It kills it all. So when I clean out a tooth, I was taught in dental school to primarily clean out a tooth using my tactile sense. In other words, I can tell when the tooth is cleaned out because it squeaks. You know, when I pass an instrument across it, a sharp, pointy instrument, it goes, and it squeaks a little bit, and the tooth feels pretty hard. Well, that's pretty archaic, isn't it? I mean, how do I know that there isn't another few little happy bacteria that just missed the end of my drill? How do I know? I don't. I really don't know. If I've removed most of the mushy decay, but suppose there's still a few bacteria in there, still marching their way down to the pulp. So what I do is I actually put a little cup over each tooth, and I ozonate the tooth first prior to putting the filling in so that I know I've killed any bacteria in there. So we use ozone all the time.
And
all of the teeth get sterilized.
Doesn't the ozone penetrate the tooth to a certain degree?
I hope so.
I mean, like, it doesn't just kill what's on the surface, but it also goes somewhat into the tooth.
Oh, well, I'm talking about a hole. I've already created a large hole in this tooth. So I have a large hole in this tooth. I'm in the dentin, and the pulp is not too far behind, maybe a millimeter, 2 millimeters away. And so this is what I'm ozonating, the inside of the tooth. And so I'm doing two things. I'm not only killing any bacteria that are traveling down those dentinal tubules and heading towards the pulp, not only am I killing them, but I'm also ozonating the red blood cells in that pulp. So I'm making them supercells. They're very happy. And they walk around with shirts that say it's supercells. They're very happy.
Dr. Phil Mollica, he's with the International Academy of IAO.
It's the international. No, it's the International School for Biological Medicine and Dentistry. International School of Biological Dental Medicine. I think I got it right.
And he was talking about having effects using ozone of osteogenesis, where he's having problems with people who whose jawbones are falling apart for various reasons, and he's actually seeing the body expel dead bone material when he's using repeated use of ozone in the form of gas and as ozonated water.
Right, that's correct. That's correct. We do the same. Uh-huh.
Okay. And so then it can help the necrotic bone to heal?
Correct. And that's a big problem in our society today because there are a lot of people who are on bisphosphonates. And so bisphosphonates are medications that are given to patients supposedly to strengthen their bones and make it harder. But it also makes the bones, there's a fine line between harder and brittle. And so if a patient is on bisphosphonates and they do have to have a tooth taken out, the bone becomes more brittle, and very often it doesn't heal completely. And so we have a problem with that. The bone becomes exposed. It doesn't heal properly. You get necrotic bone. And we have found that the only way to heal that is with ozone. And Phil Mollica and Dr. Robert Harris are probably the leading researchers when it comes to the use of ozone and bone regeneration.
Now, I know that there's hasn't the controversy over using mercury in fillings been going on since the late 1800s?
That is correct. And it's still going on today. It's a lot less quiet now. I think we might be winning the war simply because, you know, the gag rule was taken away a few years ago thanks to an attorney by the name of Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown was the past district attorney for the state of West Virginia, and he became very involved in the whole mercury issue and became interested enough to start defending some of my very good colleagues who had their licenses removed for even talking about mercury toxicity. I mean, the gag rule said that we couldn't even discuss the toxicity of mercury with our patients. And if we did so, our licenses would be revoked. And so when Charlie Brown came along and decided to help us poor biological holistic dentists, and he began to defend us based on the First Amendment. Well, when Charlie Brown came on board, every single dentist that had trouble and had to face the state boards wound up keeping their licenses. And so that happened enough times where I think they began to back off a little bit. And, you know, it's just, I'd like to say they looked at the research, but I don't think that's true because we've had research that have talked about the toxic effects of mercury. We've had that kind of research for many, many years. You know,
Dr. Gruby, what do you think about remineralizing paste, different concoctions of calcium, phosphorus, silica?
Sounds good, but it doesn't come from the outside to the inside. All healing has to take place from the inside to the outside. And so I've not seen anybody be able to put a paste on their teeth and have it heal. There was there are some products that I would not consider holistic. They use fluoride, they use gels that have what I would consider to be toxic materials. And they say they've been able to remineralize teeth, but when you look on an X-ray, you still see the darkness. And so, I'm not convinced. If I see darkness on an X-ray, to me, then that's not mineralized yet.
Mm-hmm. Are there any up-and-coming techniques or technology that you're particularly tuned into?
For remineralizing the teeth?
Just for dental health in general.
Yeah, I think the stem cell is what's fascinating me the most right now. I think the stem cell research is just going to be phenomenal.
You also do biocompatible dentistry.
Yes, yeah, I'm the owner of BioComp Laboratories in Colorado Springs, and we test patients' blood serum against many different dental components and look at the blood to see if the blood is clumping, if the serum is clumping around it. And if the person's serum does clump around a dental material, then we call that dental material a highly reactive material. If their serum does not clump, then we call that material a least reactive. Now, you'll notice I didn't say not reactive, because the only thing that your body will not react to is yourself. So there isn't a single dental material on the market that the body is not going to react to somewhat. But it's really important that especially when you're going to have a lot of dentistry, you're going to have some dentistry done, it's very important to have this blood test done beforehand, through BioComp, and find out what dental materials you're okay with and what dental materials you're not okay with. It just kind of makes sense to me. When I first heard about this, I really thought, boy, that's a no-brainer. Why wouldn't, you know, if you went into a restaurant, you certainly wouldn't say to the, you know, waiter, listen, just bring me anything you think is good. And suppose you had an allergy to dairy and you're in a French restaurant. More likely than not, the chef is going to bring you something with dairy in it. So I think you shouldn't go to the dentist and say, well, just bring me put in whatever dental material you think is going to be okay for me. No, I think everybody should have a compatibility test done first. And it's relatively easy to do. You can call the lab at 1-800-331-2303. That's 1-800-331-2303, and BioComp Laboratory will send you a free kit. And you can go and have blood drawn, send the kit in, and find out what dental materials you're okay with and what materials are you highly reactive to. I think it's a very good idea.
Sounds like it. Dr. Gruber, you are just a wealth of information, and I'd love to interview you again sometime.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
You're very welcome, Pete. Thank you.
And how can people find out more about your practice or you know, information about how to reach you if they're particularly endeared to you or in your style? And
thank you for asking. Yeah. Well, my personal website is www.drblanchegruby.com. Or you can go to centersforhealing.com. My partner, Dr. David Villarreal, and I have decided that it's time for us to develop holistic dental centers across the United States. And we started our first Centers for Healing in Thousand Oaks, California. And we're going to start heading east and hopefully end up in Scranton at our Centers for Healing in Scranton. So right now we've got West Coast Centers for Healing and we've got East Coast Centers for Healing. And all the information that a person would like to find is easily found on either one of those websites. That's centersforhealing.com or drblanchegruby.com. Either way, you'll get to the same place. And there's a wealth of information. I've got many radio interviews. I've got many videos and lots of articles on my website. You could probably spend a couple of hours just going through there, perusing through it.
Well, it's really been enlightening.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you very much.
Have a good evening.
You too.